Hello and welcome to episode 69 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I almost slipped there. I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Threfor, also known as Ben Chandler, and with us for
the record fourth time
is our friend and co-worker and employer. Would you like to introduce yourself, sir?
I am Dave Gilbert, also known as Dave Gilbert.
Dave Gilbert, could you tell us the reason you wanted to be on our podcast today?
Because I like talking with you guys.
Really?
Why would there be another reason?
Oh, I don't know. Something.
I can't possibly think what the other reason could be.
Oh, well, fair enough. That's good.
I like how Francisco couldn't even get the episode number out without stumbling.
he could. Yeah, well, all right. Anyway, yes, hello, everyone. This is our podcast.
Hello.
what's going on? How have you been, Ben?
I've been all right.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
What about you? How about you?
I've been all right, you know, recovering from
GDC. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, Dave, how are you?
Kind of coming down off the GDC and PAX kind of craziness. I spent all week in voice acting sessions, and that's all done. I'm in the middle of editing that, and I am enjoying that about as much as I usually do.
Hmm. Are you getting the nerd flu?
No.
Yeah.
No, surprisingly not.
Yeah,
I was good this year. I took care of myself. Like, I didn't eat a lot of crap. I didn't drink very heavily except that one night at the adventure party. And I went to bed at regular hours. I was actually quite boring this year.
Yeah.
What happened? You've changed, though.
Well, I think I'm knocking on wood here, but I don't think I've gotten the nerd flu yet, because usually I get it within the week after coming back, and I've been feeling all right. But yeah, I kind of did the same thing. I mean, I drank a little too much at the Wild Rumpus party and kind of stayed up. Well, no, I kept pretty regular hours too, but I think partly the fact that I didn't really go on the expo floor very much may have contributed to it. And I have you to thank for that, Dave, because I was doing interviews most of the time with you. So
oh, yeah.
That's why
it's
I didn't go on the expo.
It's great having a minion. Go on interviews for me. This is wonderful.
Is that what I was?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The truth is out.
Fair enough.
I did ask you to go. There was one that we were both going to go to, and there was a talk I really wanted to go to, so I just asked you to, you know,
The IGN Italia one. That was fun.
It was such a pain in the ass getting to GDC. That
yeah, that's right. You did have a pain.
I missed half of the narrative game summit, so I really wanted to make the most of it. And so, yeah, I figured that interview was something that, you know, you could handle.
Yeah, I could. It wasn't really anything out of this world.
I figured, yeah.
Good game, that.
Well, yeah, it is. It is a good game out of this world. You should play it, Dave.
I have played Out of This World. Are you kidding?
You have?
Yeah, Dave's played
it.
Oh, I thought you
had. He's told me he's played it.
Oh, I thought you had. I mean, that's why our Max Shuba...
Way back in, 1990-something or another.
Yeah, okay. I thought you didn't get the Max Shuba joke, and it was because you hadn't played Out of This World. I was confused.
Max Shuba?
You know, the alien guy, the first thing when you break out of the cage, he touches you, and he goes, Max Shuba!
I don't remember that.
How can you not remember? That's like the only line of dialogue in the whole game.
This was like, oh my god.
I think he can be forgiven for not remembering something from 20 years ago.
I don't even want to think about how long ago it was.
I was still in college, god. Oh my god. It was like 1998, 97 when I played that game.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Speaking of playing games, have you guys been playing anything?
Yes.
Oh.
I have been slowly going through and... sort of finished, sort of didn't. I've been going through the Phoenix Wright series.
Oh yeah, I saw your. I've been seeing
your
tweets.
I've been kind of praising it on social media because in my mind, I'm really, really, really enjoying it. Hmm. It's funny that I'm enjoying it so much because it kind of goes against all my philosophies and rules about dialogue in games, and where it's all dialogue. There's nothing else, but there's like it manages to. The gameplay is organized in such a way that actually makes you want to read it and follow everything. It's like murder mysteries. It's sort of like, you know, it's like a kind of an episode of Law and Order, how the first half of it is like investigating, and then the second half is the courtroom. And the courtroom stuff is the best. And what's amazing is that they're all murder mysteries, but there's so many interlocking pieces to what happened, and it never becomes confusing. And it's amazing when you try to describe what the heck happened afterward, it makes no sense. You can't do it, but it all makes sense when you're playing it. And they do this like three or four or five times every single game, and every line, everything is like a plot twist. It's amazing. It's and
how many games are there so far? Because I know there's quite a few.
There's five. I've been playing them on iOS. The first three are available in a bundle pack. And then for some reason, the fourth one, it's called Apollo Justice, is not available on iOS. But the fifth one is. So I had to skip the fourth one. Yeah. So that's why I said I sort of finished it, because I got to the end of the last one, but I still have to go back and play number four.
And is there continuity among the games?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
Yeah, there is.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
They actually do a job of explaining things, though, if you missed one of them, which I certainly did. They, it's like, what? Like, Phoenix now adopted a kid, and what is this? Like, suddenly, but it explains it just fine, and it's, you know, so it's, they're really, really good. I didn't, and not only that, like, really, really kind of learn something from them. Like, wow, they do this really well. Because mysteries are always hard to design, and they do them wonderfully.
Good. Maybe I should check those out at some point.
They're completely bananas as well.
Well, I like things that are completely bananas.
Yes.
What about you, Ben? What have you been playing?
I just finished this evening Warlords Battlecry 3, so that's all I've been playing
last
2 weeks.
I hear that's a pretty good game.
Oh, bad game. But it's, I mean, it's excellent. It's an excellent, excellent game. You should not get it, because all of your free time will get sucked up by this game. That's all there is to it. So I as soon as I finished it, it's like, oh, you can go around and explore the rest of the world now if you want. And I was like, uninstall. You have taken it out of my life.
Really? You uninstalled it?
Yeah.
It's pretty harsh.
Yeah. I'm the same way. Whenever I play an open world game and then it ends and it's like, all right, you can do whatever you want. I'm like, I'm done. Let me get back to my life.
Yeah. That was 50 hours that I want back. Well, I don't want it back, because I had a good time with it. But, I mean, other than that, I've been playing a couple of the main. I've finished two of those. I've got one left to play. And those, so far, have been very good.
You played what? Sorry, you cut out.
What's that, sorry?
You cut out when you said, I played a couple of the...
I've played a couple of the Mags games this month. Oh, I've played two of the three. So I have one left to play.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. I haven't been following Mags. I've been a very bad AGS forum member.
What do playing you play? AGS Tell us now.
That's crazy.
I know, right?
Who what have you been AGS? Playing, Francisco?
I haven't been playing anything. I got back from GDC and I've just been... I just dove headfirst back into working. So I haven't really had... Yeah, exactly. And I'm not just saying that because the boss is on the podcast. It's actually true. I really haven't. Although book two of Dreamfall Chapters apparently came out yesterday, and so I want to check that out. And I still need to finish.
Yeah, that's right.
I still need to finish the last episode of The Wolf Among Us. So there's a lot I still have to play, and of course I have to keep on playing The Last of Us. But no, the closest I came to playing games was I installed ScumVM on my laptop, and I copied over five LucasArts games. And just kind of tested them to see if they worked. Five LucasArts games and Toonstruck, which apparently works in ScumVM now. So I'm looking forward to replaying those games as well as Toonstruck, because it's been years.
I'm amazed that game, when I played that game like in 99 or 2000 or something, and like I remember not really caring much about it when I played it. I'm like, this is all right. And then it isn't, suddenly years later, there's this huge amount of nostalgia and love for that game, and I don't quite understand why.
And there's been all these efforts to kind of make the sequel, because apparently they ran out of time and money when they made the first one, and there was a whole bunch of material that got cut, but it was like fully produced stuff that got cut, and it was intended to be the part two, but they never got around to it. So I don't know. It's weird. It's a quirky game. I don't know if it holds up. I'm kind of worried and paranoid now because Torrance Passage didn't, so I'm worried that other games from my youth that
was
I'm nostalgic about. I liked it when I was 13.
Yeah. Francisco was like,
yeah.
And then when I started playing it, he was watching it on Skype, and he's like, oh, man.
I remember back when, like, I would play these games and I would just, I'd always like them no matter how bad they were because, hey, Sierra, they're great. And I'm just playing them. And, but I remember playing Torrent's Passage and it was the first time where I'm like, this is just like,
really?
I don't know. It just, the intro, I remember had this, like, I know you talked about it last week, but it's like, no, the intro promised this, like, huge fantasy world of, like, you know, family backstabbing and struggles and magic. And then you play the game and it's like, like, I'm just Torin, and I got this pink whatever he is, and I've been years. And
he's purple.
Yeah, he doesn't really do very much, and there was something to do with grass.
Oh, God, like, the grass.
The thing that got me is, like, you're in this huge, big fantasy world, and they're like, okay, it's the first world. Find someone his lunch. It's the second world. Find 9 tiles. Like, you've got these worlds that could be interesting, and the things that you actually do, like the actual actions that you complete in the game, are like the most mundane things imaginable. Like finding someone lunch, who cares?
You know what I find interesting is that you hated the Bitternuts, but yet you're really enjoying Hi Honey, I'm Home.
Yeah, because Hi Honey, I'm Home is hilarious, and the Bitternuts are just awful. I cannot stand them.
Oh man, Dave, this is totally derailing the podcast topic, but Dave, did you ever watch Hi Honey, I'm Home back in like the early to mid 90s on Nickelodeon or Nick at Night? Oh, I think we lost Dave. He hated Hi Honey, I'm Home so much
hated Torrent's Passage so
it much. killed him. Oh, well.
I mean, I don't blame him for that, because, I mean, I've played Torrent's Passage.
Yeah, well, Torrent's Passage just was a victim of nostalgia in my case. But anyway.
Yeah.
While we
Do you know what always amazes... This always amazes me, is that, like, I can be, like, in the middle of literally nowhere, and my internet sometimes holds up better than New York internet. I really do not get... I sincerely do not get that. I do not understand, because my internet is terrible.
To be fair, Dave is on Time Warner, which is probably the most loathed and hated internet service in all of America, especially New York, because they have a monopoly in New York. It's either Time Warner or Fios, and if you have to get one or the other, you're screwed. I have Optimum, which is the third-party Ross Perot of internet.
Cool.
Well, my internet's pretty good most of the time. It's just sometimes it doesn't, you know, doesn't like to happen. Let's see if we can get Dave back now. In the meantime, yeah, it's pretty crazy, the old internet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, well, no, he doesn't seem to be coming back. Anyway, meantime, before we get into today's topic, as we were talking about, what do we usually talk about after we talk about what we played? We usually get into the topic, don't we?
Well, we usually talk shit for about 15 minutes.
That's true, and it's only been 12. What's wrong with us? Stop typing.
Are you still recording this for the podcast? We've lost Dave.
Yeah, I'm still recording.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, life goes on. I can type. You are not my boss. My boss isn't here, so I can do what I want until he's back.
I see. When the boss is away, the cat will play. I see.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, anyway, So this week's topic, before we get Dave back.
I think we might have a Dave.
Yes, we have. We do have a Dave. Ah, hello.
I'm back.
Yeah, you are.
Hi, Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Sorry about that. Our internet just suddenly went down. That was bizarre.
It's okay.
We were just joking about your internet.
Yeah, we were just joking about how New York internet sucks.
Yeah, it does. Though Brooklyn internet.
Yeah, Brooklyn internet's pretty shitty.
We never had any trouble at all.
Yeah.
We had Verizon BIOS, and I could count on one hand the amount of times we got trouble.
Yeah.
And it was always solid, never never slow. We move here, and it's like... You know, we can't even get the Wi-Fi to go into the next room. We have to get an extender, and it's
that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, but
oh well. But before you crashed, I was asking if you had ever watched Hi Honey, I'm Home on Nickelodeon back in like the mid '90s.
No, I don't think so.
It was on Nick at Night. Actually, it was actually really clever. It was a sitcom about a '50s sitcom. Character, a family from a '50s sitcom whose sitcom had gotten canceled, So they had to relocate to the real world, and they had to like blend in with the actual, you know, real world people. But it was a sitcom. And then they had a thing called the Turnerizer, which would make them go into black and white when they were feeling lonely. And then they would have like guests from old TV sitcoms come and visit them. And I had completely forgotten about this show. It's great.
I'm glad that I watched this before you tried to explain it to me, because hearing it like that makes no sense at all. To me, but having seen it, it's quite self-aware and fun. Like,
well, yeah, that's what it's about.
You have to see it to get it.
You can't deny that. That's what it's about.
Is this 50s sitcom family living in the 90s, or are they living in the 50s?
No, they're living in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
They crawled out of their cable box and they live in the 90s. And they have to deal with the 90s. It's very fish out of water, but it's also clever and self-aware. And, yeah, it makes fun of sitcom tropes stuff. And it's all on YouTube, so if you're bored one day, you can watch it on YouTube. I want to relive my childhood and watch it. It only lasted one season, sadly.
I don't know how much mileage they can get out of a joke like that.
It is like... I've seen, like, one episode, and I'm like, how far can you stretch this joke? Because, like, you know... It is very much a sort of a niche sense of humor, but I thought it was very clever for what I saw.
Reminds me of a very short-lived sitcom called The Charmings. You ever hear this?
Nope.
It's basically the same premise, except it's like Snow White, Prince Charming, and one of the dwarves, and the magic mirror.
Why
living
only
in like
one?
A modern house. It was basically that.
Oh. Sitcoms are so weird. I will never understand them. I will never understand this genre.
No, it's pretty stupid, to be honest. But, yeah, anyway. So, speaking of genres...
Oh my god!
Damn.
I am the Segway King. Beep! That one goes out to Brian and Chris and the Square Waves FM podcast. We've had a topic suggestion today. I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been Brian, maybe someone else. But they asked if we had ever considered branching out into other genres aside from adventure games. And I think that's a very interesting topic, because I feel we all have quite a bit to say about that. Dave, I know that you were working on an isometric RPG that people still ask you about to this day for a while.
Janet just laughed.
Ah, there you go. I heard her. And Ben, you have also... thought about working in other genres, as have I. So yeah. let's talk about this. Years ago,
I was working on... Hold on, guys. I need to get my headphones. I'll be right back.
Okay.
You talk about your game, Ben.
Well, I mean... Yeah. I would say that I never wanted to make adventure games. I wanted to make an RTS. I was a huge like Command and Conquer and Red Alert fanatic when I was like, a kid. And when I was in high school, me and a couple of friends were talking to like the IT teacher at our school, and we were like, "Oh, we really want to make computer games. We don't know how. We don't even know the basic thing." And he was like, "Oh, it's really super super easy. You know, I'll put aside like one lunch hour a week and I'll teach you guys how to make it." And I'm like, "Can you do it so like you can click and like the person moves around?" He's like, "Yeah, that's really super easy." But he never ended up making that like slot for us. So like, but I always wanted to make a like RTS game. And I actually worked on one for a little bit with DKH, another AGS.
Oh yeah,
member.
Sure.
And
DKH.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jan Simon.
Simon.
I remember that name.
Yeah, and he was working on Fountain of Youth and you know, a bunch of other projects. But yeah, we worked on that for a while, and that was interesting. That was kind of fun to like fulfill that urge when I was young. But I mean, I love all genres of games. So like, I want to make like at one point I've wanted to make all genres of games. Like I've made like racing, like crappy, like terrible racing games on my TI-83 calculator. I made like attempts at role playing games and stuff like that. You know, so I've dabbled. I've made platformers. I've made like, you know, top down shooty like Tyrion style things. So I've dabbled in everything because I love every genre of games except for tower defense and MMOs.
Oh really? I love tower defense.
Really?
Can be fun, but
they're a guilty pleasure.
No,
Honestly, they...
Are you kidding? I'll play a hidden object game over a tower defense that game any day of the week.
Oh, no, not me. I would play a tower defense game over a hidden object game any day of the week.
Yeah, that's because you relish being wrong.
No, you relish your hot dogs.
His claws are out.
Yeah, he's a... That's a naughty kitty. Don't make me get the spray bottle. Anyway, Dave, you were going to talk about your RPG.
Jen and I had this kind of very idealistic idea of doing an RPG game, was we both always loved, you know, Fallout and those games, like a lot of people do. And so we, this was back before Kickstarter, you know, brought them back like crazy. This was like back in when we were first married, so it was 2009, and we both had this idea of a kind of Fallout style gameplay, but set in a Prohibition era city. So you'd have like gangsters and, you know, detectives and things like that. And that was our idea. And Janet said she could, took a crack at making an engine. And we had this interesting, workflow idea where we took these, 3D models from Daz Studio because it was actually very cheap to use, you didn't have to pay a license to use pre-rendered stuff. So we managed to do this thing where we managed to pre-render things, cut them into tiles, and then we actually made a level design. She made a level editor out of all this stuff, and it actually looked really good. It took her 6 months to do, and it took a long time, but we managed to get it so you could create a level using like streets and buildings and things like that, and you could walk a guy around it. But that's as far as she got in 6 months, and she was getting so tired and burnt out by it. It was a lot of work for one person to do, more than we thought it would be. And she just said, you know, can we just tackle this Resonance game instead? And so that's what we did, and it was definitely the better decision. Otherwise, she'd still be working on it. It was a huge project for one person to do.
I want to get enough money to afford a baby in like the next year or so.
Yeah, Resonance was a much better prospect. So it was,
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, she'd still be working on that game if we hadn't done that. And Resonance probably still wouldn't have come out. Sorry, Vince.
I think with an RPG, you know, we're very lucky because with adventure games, not only are they a much simpler style of game, you know, you don't have to have structs and structs full of all this data that you're trying to process for like all these characters, but also we have a pre-built engine. We don't have to do any of the hard stuff.
I've never tried it, but there is RPG Maker. I know a guy who's doing Kickstarter, an RPG that he's making in RPG Maker called Vidar, and it looks pretty good. I don't know how you know, something like RPG Maker compares to something like AGS as far as ease of use, but...
It's very easy to use. I know that kind of the first person to make a commercial game using it, her name is Amanda Finch.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, her game, what's it called? Aviond. And she's basically launched an entire business on selling RPG Maker games. She's kind of like the... she's like the portal for RPG Maker games. It's amazing. Like, she started this thing, and they do really well.
And she's the you of RPG Maker, basically.
They're what?
She's the you of RPG Maker.
But she doesn't even publish them. She's like a big fish of RPG Maker games. Like, it's the place to buy them. If you want to sell an RPG Maker game, you sell them on her website. It's like, but there's a huge business there. And in the last, like, decade or so, much like with AGS, but much, much more so with RPG Maker, there's just been a huge resurgence in commercial RPG Maker games. Like, it's huge. I was tempted to make one, but honestly, I the problem with RPG Maker games is that it requires, even if you do all original art, it will still look like an RPG Maker game.
Really? And it's going to be a top-down... Like, yeah, they all look the same.
They all look the same. I mean, with AGS games, they all look different.
You could say AGS games all look the same. That's not really fair saying they all look the same, but they have a very similar aesthetic. Like, right. You know, so.
Well, if you're familiar with AGS games, you're familiar with like the way they work, kind of. Like, you know, like if you're... when I was at PAX, the guy who made Dropsy the Clown, he's ported his game to...
He listens to our podcast, Dave.
Oh, hi.
Oh, yeah, and he might be...
He's ported his game to Unity.
Okay.
And but it looks like an AGS game, and so I'm forgetting it's not an AGS game. So I'm doing the thing that AGS games do, where if you're walking a direction, you keep clicking, the character will kind of, you know, twitch in a funny way, and I'm just sort of used to that. And it's sort of how I pass the time when a character's walking through a room. But he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do that because it wasn't AGS. So I'm like, oh, it's not AGS.
Ah.
Heartbroken.
Yeah.
Jay might be coming to Mittens, actually. He's expressed interest. So come to Mittens, Jay. I'd love to meet you. He's from Orlando, so he's a fellow Floridian.
Yeah, we were talking about that. We were talking about Disney World and stuff.
Oh, boy. Good old Disney World. Anyway,
I think, like, even though there's RPG Maker, if you try and, like, I worked when I was doing, like, freelance graphics, you know, probably back in 2011, maybe, I worked very briefly on an RPG Maker project, and just to get the game to, like, have 6 frames of walk animation instead of, like, the usual RPG 4, where it's, like, 1 foot back, 1 foot front, then both feet in the middle, and then the other way around, that's how they all walk. It was, like, required this ridiculous customization, and
it's
like
it's designed to make something very, very specific.
Yeah,
it does that
so, like,
very, very well with very little room for experimentation, unless you really get into like the bones of it and rearrange things.
That's kind of a shame.
I think that's like part of the strength is that like if you just want to make one of these RPG Maker like things, then you can just jump in with very little knowledge. But trying to do something like Fallout in that, I think would be prohibitively impossible. Basically,
you couldn't do.
You'd be better off writing your own engine.
I mean, you could, but then you might as well just build a whole new engine.
Exactly. That's like as much as there is RPG Maker. Trying to use that for a project like you were, you know, looking at doing. That would be a nightmare. And
also, it kind of like. I don't know. Like it doesn't. I guess I've got the Western sensibility. Like I look at an RPG Maker game, and it just doesn't do it for me.
Hmm.
You know, it's.
I think it depends if you grew up playing console games or grew up playing PC games.
I think that is the difference.
Yeah.
Because I was talking to an RPG Maker developer, and I was like, "Yeah, my problem is that this just looks like any other RPG Maker game." It's like, "Oh no, but I made all original art." I said, "Yeah, but you have to." Do it in such a specific way that it looks like every other RPG Maker.
Yeah, they all
it's
end
hard
up looking
explain
like
what I mean. But
no,
you
they
talk
all
to
look like
a guy who uses RPG Maker. They're like, no, it's all original art. I swear, and anyone could tell. I can't because I'm not an RPG Maker guy. So
they all end up it's looking like the Secret of Mana. Basically, I think that's like the gold standard that everyone subscribes to.
Well, what's interesting? Way back
Secret
when,
of Mana
like,
looks amazing.
Yeah.
When I was like first looking at RPG Maker, like this was like back in 2004 or 2005, I was just sort of, you know, I was toying with the idea of doing commercial stuff, whatever. And I always loved role playing games, and I was looking at RPG Maker and I played some games with it, and I was amazed how many were incomplete and how many like were all ripoffs of each other, or used graphics from like Chrono Trigger and Secrets of Mana and even Zelda. And I would read reviews of these games, and it was actually kind of encouraged. Like this game uses, you know, shows a great use of the Secrets of Mana chipset. But if like you or I, even for freeware, made a game using graphics from like Monkey Island, that wouldn't be considered a good thing.
Funny you should say that.
I'm talking freeware, about obviously, that. Not commercial, but...
Let's talk about Carver Island.
Hey, shut up! We don't talk about that anymore.
But you drew all that from scratch. It wasn't like you lifted it directly from the old game and put it in. Did you? I thought you... All right.
Well, for the first one or two, I did lift a couple of things directly from the game, and I just did paint overs of sprites. Yeah, the one you saw at Mittens was all originally drawn.
Let me put it this way. You're ashamed of that.
Oh, yeah, I am ashamed of
that. In the RPG Maker community, that's not something to be ashamed of.
Right. But plenty of AGS games have been made just ripping sprites from other adventure games and just like, and it hasn't been encouraged so much in the forums, but it's not...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's kind of more seen as like a practice.
It's not something that's actually praised.
Right.
Like you see a game on the AGS forum that uses, you know, graphics from Willy Beamish, and you're like, oh, that's lame. That's the first thing you'd think. Oh, it's Willy Beamish.
Right, exactly.
But with...
Or paintovers of sprites of other AGS games.
You're still bitter about that, aren't you?
What is
no,
this?
I'm not.
Take it as a compliment.
I'm not bitter because the game never got released, so it's fine. I'll tell you later, Dave.
Okay.
But no, going way back to like 1996, 1997, when I got my copy of Click and Play, this was my first foray into game making. And yeah, I used Click and Play to make a whole bunch of different games, like platformers and really crappy racing games. I made a really crappy racing game about one of my teachers. This is a common thread with me, to make games about my teachers, apparently. But it was my Spanish teacher, and I had him teaching Driver's Ed. So it was like a really stupid obstacle course, little top-down racing game. Click and Play was great for all that stuff, but Click and Play was another one of those programs where if you saw it, you would know it was a Click and Play game because came with... Yeah.
Wasn't Edmundo's Drunk Island or something like that? That was Edmundo, right?
Yes, it was, and that was in Click and Play. And I tried making adventure games as well in Click and Play because Jenny Hanula, who I don't think she was ever an AGSer, but she was big in the Click and Play scene. She made her own Monkey Island ripoff called The Secret of Brother Island. And so that was kind of the inspiration for me to say, hey, look, you actually can make point-and-click adventure games in Click and Play. It was really difficult and stupid because if you would click, it was this really complex thing where it would, like, you know, you basically clicked and had the command to, like, move your little player character to the mouse coordinates, and it never worked right. Because you didn't have walkable areas. It was just kind of like across the screen and stuff. So it was kind of a pain in the ass to get working right. But you could do it. Well, I mean, it was surprisingly versatile.
You could do it like Simon the Sorcerer. Simon the Sorcerer, like, totally just has Simon walking a straight line.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Very, very rarely, like, needs a walkable area, like, of any complexity.
Yeah. Or you could even do it like Willy Beamish or the FMV games, where you have your character on the screen and you just click on the exit and they do like a little two-frame walk thing, and they don't actually, but you can't actually walk them freely throughout the screen.
Yeah, but just walk on hotspots and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm Click and Play. I still have Click and Play. I've been meaning to like fire it up and see. It probably doesn't work anymore because of, you know, old versions of Windows. But it really was a surprisingly versatile engine for what you could do. And I'll never forget the little intro video with the creepy old man who's like, "Hello, welcome to Click and Play. You can make any game you want." And it's just like,
I remember,
please stop talking to me, creepy old man.
When I was looking into this, when I was looking at adventure game tools in like 1999, there was like Scram. Sludge and something else. And
that's where I met Eric
AGS
Fierstein.
Is the only one that really, what?
The Scram boards is where I met Mr. Colossal, Eric.
Really?
Interesting, yeah.
Hey, I did not know that.
Yeah, and Edmundo. Well, no, Edmundo I knew from Click and Play before. I don't remember how I met him. I think I met him on like the Monkey Island IRC channel or something. But yeah, I feel old.
Like when I was at GDC, there was a grown man, you know, was interviewing me, and he's like, "Yeah, man, I played the Shiv when I was 12."
You were sad about that.
God damn it. I guess it's going to happen. It happens. It'll happen to us all eventually. Yeah. But
I was like 18 or 19 when I played the Shiv.
it's just weird. The fact that like kids graduating from college. Yeah. They were 12 when I made my first commercial game.
Well,
probably born when I made my first freeware game.
I guess that
happens to us all, doesn't it?
Some people have told me that they grew up, quote-unquote, playing the Ben Jordan games and that they were kids, and I'm like, it was only an 8-year period. I mean, that's enough time to grow up, but still, I was like, I wasn't that old when I made the first one.
Well, imagine if you were like 14 when you pick it up, and then, you know, like you're 22 when you finish it. When you're that age, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Between 14 and 22.
I guess.
I remember being like really inspired by, do you remember like the Defender Rob Blank 1?
Yeah, sure.
Right. I remember playing that when I was in like high school or like, you know, middle school, and being really inspired by it because I was playing it and I was like, man, I can draw better than this guy and he can make a game. So why can't I make a game? Like, that was really inspiring to me. I was like, man, anyone can make a game.
Yeah.
You know who wrote that game?
Yahtzee.
That was Yahtzee.
It was Ben Yahtzee Croshaw.
Guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, It's. I mean, I missed the whole Yahtzee being in the AGS forums game. Like, all that 5 Days of Strange, and they'd all been done by the time I came to AGS. But like, you know, it was Rob Blank One that made me go, man, I could do this. I could do graphics for a game. Like, I was at least like, I could at least do graphics for a game. If this guy is getting games done, then why can't I?
Yeah, right. I felt the same way. I don't remember
it's
if it was...
It's funny that you weren't inspired because you did it so well. You were inspired because you thought you could do it better.
I think it kind of, that was the exciting thing about AGS, is that it lowered the mental, like, entry barrier that you had this thing, like, I had this thing, like, oh, normal people can't make games, you have to be some super genius or something like that, and there was this finished game that had clearly been made by some guy in his bedroom, like, just whatever, and I was like, man, making games is accessible, like, I could do this, you know, that was really inspiring.
That
was,
and then, like, when I first discovered Reality on the Norm, I'm like, I could design one of these games, and
also
did,
created
and
by Yahtzee. So we have Yahtzee to thank for the fact that we're making games, because his games were pretty much the gateway for a lot of people. Yeah, I still to this day don't remember if it was the first Reality on the Norm or the first Rob Blank that I played first, but it was one of them, and I remember playing them my freshman year of college and thinking, "Hey, I can do this." So yeah.
Yeah, I think that was, it was a really empowering thing to see a game that had clearly been made by someone who wasn't like some super professional guy. He was still like, you know, he was at sort of our skill level, and you go, hey, if this guy can do it, why can't I? That's super empowering. I love that.
And not only that, with an engine that, you know, mimicked what I wanted, because, you know, with Click and Play, you kind of had to think outside the box, but here was an engine that, you know, could replicate that Sierra-esque GUI or the LucasArts or whatever. So.
Oh, a Sierra S? Dude, I played it and I was like, oh, this is the Sierra GUI. Like,
yeah. Well, it is the Sierra. Yeah, it's the Sierra GUI.
It is. And Yahtzee didn't change a thing, at least in Rob Blank 1. It was all there.
Well, the reason why it's so well known and it was so big at the time is because it was the first game made in the engine that was fully complete. No one had ever made a complete game before. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, I still remember when games that looked like that and, you know, like Rob Blank and, you know, Larry Vales and
Larry,
you know, all the Reality of the Norm games, that all the games looked like that. Like, that was normal. And how the average perception and production values of even freeware games just kind of are higher now.
Yeah.
Oh, freeway, man, you play like latest, you play current mags entries and the quality is crazy. It's like mind blowing what people will do in a month. Like, in their spare time.
Yeah. Hey, I thought we were talking about other genres here.
Yeah, I know. We always get off topic.
We got lost.
It's fine. We'll go back to where we... So I guess the big question that I was going to ask at the beginning, which I'm glad that we're in the middle now because, you know, it gives us more time. If you had the opportunity right now to have as much money as you wanted and, you know, unlimited resources, but you had to work in a genre, make a game in a genre outside adventure games, what genre would you pick and what would your game be about? And we'll go in alphabetical order. Ben first. By first name.
Oh, you really want me to answer this?
I already know the answer, but go ahead.
Do you know the answer?
I think I do.
Because I would expect me to say role-playing game, because I've actually like thought about trying to build an engine in AGS with a role-playing game. But I if I could do anything, I would totally build a first-person shooter.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to go with RTS.
Yeah, no, I would, like, if I had, like, the option, I would totally do a first-person shooter. I would, like, if I had, like, unlimited time, and the thing is, like, I don't have the skills to do a first-person shooter. Like, I do not have those, I've focused on adventure games, which has been very
good. That's right,
because, you know, to the point where I'm working on games I really love, but if I had, like, the skills to do it and stuff like that, I'd love to just try building one first-person shooter.
But that's not the question. Is unlimited resources? You have an entire team at your disposal to program it for you.
Oh, like
you
slaves that I can whip.
Yeah, slaves you can whip. What would you? Yeah, what genre? What would your game be about? What would your first person shooter bring to the table that no other one had done, or would you just do like an homage to like your favorites?
Well, I wouldn't. It's time to pitch your game. Sorry.
It's time to pitch your game idea. Let's go.
Well, I haven't really thought about it, but I would totally do a first-person shooter that was not cover-based.
Okay.
That was movement-based and skill-based. Like, you know, back in the first-person shooter games that I love to play are like the ones from the 90s where the enemy fire was projectile based quite a lot. So in order to avoid it, you had to move to dodge. You weren't hiding behind cover. It wasn't waiting, you know, for gaps in the action. It's actually seeing things and avoiding them with skill rather than with patience. And I would like to do a game like that with that sort of action, but in an explorable world with, you know, like adventure elements and role-playing elements like in Deus Ex. That's literally what I would build. I have no idea about setting or anything like that, but okay. I want a Deus Ex-style adventure RPG mixed into a game. Basically, I build Strife. Right. That's simple.
That's what I figured, yes.
You know. Yeah, but that's, like, I don't see a lot of, there's a lot of games, like, first-person shooters are really, really incorporating, like, RPG elements. You even look at the big mainstream ones like Rage, you know, they're trying to put crafting in there and stuff like that.
Mm.
That doesn't interest me so much because it doesn't feel necessarily part of the game world. You know, you don't need that crafting element, I don't think. What I want is a world that I can explore, a big open world with lots of places to explore. Like, when I played Rage, it was heartbreaking to me because you had this amazing engine that could do these huge vistas with, like, the mega technology, and they wasted it all on, like, a really, like, with really annoying driving gameplay. And when you got to the first-person shooter bits, you're in, like, these cramped little levels. That's not what I want. I want big levels that I can run fast in and, like, you know, explore. That's what I want.
All right.
It's a good thing you've got unlimited resources.
It's a very good thing that I don't, because I'd probably, like, waste, like, 20 years of my life trying to get this game. You know, the game I've just pitched is probably impossible to build, so it's a good thing I'm doing low-res adventure games.
Certain game developers have said that if you don't spend at least 20 years on your game, then it's no good. So...
Oh, gosh.
Just
yeah.
saying, not to that open up weird. That can of worms. Anyway, Dave, what about you? What would you do?
I mean, well, I kind of already talked about the kind of game. I would go with RPG myself.
Okay.
I mean, kind of my dream game right now is, I guess everyone's got their dream license, rather. Mm-hmm. And if I had, like, you know, unlimited resources, I would, like, first of all, I'd try to get the IP rights to Dresden Files.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that one coming, like,
yes,
10 miles away.
Yeah, so did I.
I would try to make a Vampire Bloodline style RPG set in that world. Mm-hmm. There's that also, or do something of my own set in that world. I'm actually kind of, well, I couldn't do something of my own set in that world. Something in that vein.
So you'd want to do a first-person 3D RPG, basically.
Yes, I guess.
But you played
just narrowing it down
third-person, Dave.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Third-person. Yeah, I wouldn't do it first-person because that makes me motion sick.
Right,
I would
right.
design a game that would make me sick. but, yeah, something more like...
Oh, wait.
The interesting thing about... the way that the structure involved in telling stories and those kind of RPGs, I really, really enjoy. And in fact, I'm actually trying to incorporate that style of storytelling in the next game that I'm designing.
Okay. I think that's cool.
I missed the golden opportunity for a joke there, but since I'm so awful, I'm going to try and get it back. What was that you said, Dave?
This is embarrassing.
You said you didn't want to design a first-person RPG, because why?
Because I get motion sick.
Yeah, and you said I don't want to design a game that makes...
That would make me sick.
Yeah, what about Bestowers of Eternity? Oh! Sorry.
I don't get it. First of all, I don't know what the heck that game is. Never heard of it. Ever.
See, so presumably it makes you sick thinking about it, so.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, I see. Clever.
No idea what you're talking about.
Touche.
And neither do you. You're making crap up.
Yeah, you're right.
This is how we treat both our guests on our podcast and our employer.
This is so getting edited out of the final version, too.
dear.
Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, right. So Dave wants to make an RPG.
Well, like, I'm kind of incorporating those storytelling style, like the storytelling structure, kind of, into the next game that I'm doing. I've actually was very inspired by Francisco's heard me tell the story about a dozen times at GDC, but I was very inspired by something a woman named Jennifer Hepler said, who's a BioWare writer, a former BioWare writer, where she said she wish she could skip the combat in Mass Effect in Dragon Age, and she got a lot of flack for that. And it turns out I went to summer camp with that woman. I didn't.
Nice.
Because she changed her name. You know, she got married and changed her name. I didn't realize it was, you know, the girl I went to summer camp with, but it was. And she remembered who I was, which was cool. But anyway, I had been basically following her career for years, and I didn't know it was the same person. But anyway, I was very inspired by that. And I thought, yeah, why not? Why can't you have that kind of storytelling without the combat? And that's basically closer to an adventure game than RPG. So why not do that? And so that's what I'm trying to do next.
I was just going to say, I got through Planescape Torment only doing that one combat or one battle that you had to do. So
yeah,
I guess Torment without the Torment would be close as well. Not nearly as actually, I can't even call Torment big because it's not really it's a very dense game, but I wouldn't call
it really dense. Big one. It's not huge, but what's there is takes forever to get through. It's just there's a lot to do in a small area.
Yeah.
I think, like, for me, like, when you think about combat and stuff like that, when you talk to people about the role-playing genre, they instantly assume combat, which is kind of silly because when you think about role-playing, you've got, like, I always wished, like, in Baldur's Gate, you could play a bard and, like, talk your way out of situations. I always, like, I'm like, why am I playing a bard and, like, having to resort to combat? I don't want that. I'm a bard. I should be able to, like, charm my way out of this. My charisma is sky high, you know? So, for me, role-playing should be, like, I don't know if you've played the sorcery games on, like, iOS yet, Dave, but, like, they're, like, their encounters are, like, sort of, they're sort of skewed to the way that if you play your cards right and, you know, you sort of figure the situations out, you can completely skip combat, like, 90% of the time.
I played a bit of the first one.
Okay. Yeah, but, like, that's for me, that's role-playing. You're playing a role. It doesn't necessarily have to be a combative role.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I really like to think about why are we interacting with the world this way. Like, you think about adventure games and everyone goes, oh, you got to have puzzles, but why can't you have, like, the investigation thing? Why can't you have, you know, these other forms of interaction and think
adventure
about...
Adventure games lend themselves so well to that kind of thing. I mean,
they really do.
Basically walking around and poking at things, and that's what you do, pretty much.
Yeah, so I think when you actually stop and think about the story that you're trying to tell and think how can the gameplay suit the story and the tone of the experience I'm trying to create sell? I think a role-playing game without combat makes perfect sense if you're playing that sort of character, like that class or that, you know, personality type.
Yeah. Easier said than done, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Obviously. Like, I'm not going to change the genre overnight with a throwaway comment on a podcast, but I still, when you think about it, it's like you can make, like, the Shiver has, what, two inventory items?
Yeah.
Like, and you've got, like, a, you know, an adventure game with no combining stuff, you know, and that's like
that was where the whole clue combining came into play.
That's it's a totally different thing. You're combining information, not items, I guess.
Yeah, speaking of which, like, that clue combining was taken from, you know, Discworld Noir, so Discworld. A moment for Terry Pratchett there.
Sad day. Anyway.
Sorry, now I just brought the whole mood down. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I kind of had, like, a quiet day to myself today. Like, you know, I was a very big Terry Pratchett fan, and
me too.
I mean, I think we're very lucky, like, that this guy wrote something like 50 books, and like, so if you're a fan of his writing, you like, you've got enough to read that you can reread his stuff, like, for the rest of your life. Like, there's so much. There's such an impressive body of work.
What's amazing. I was reading this this book of essays that he wrote, and he talked about his work process, how he writes a minimum of 500 sentences a day, like no less. And if he finishes a book and he hasn't reached that 500th sentence, he starts the next one.
Wow. That's crazy.
I'm like, wow. Like, this is how we managed to get
a book. There's no stopping.
This is how we got two books out a year. I mean, it's just – it blew my mind. Yeah.
And like – and. You know, he's a very determined guy. Like, you hear him talk about, like he used to play a lot of computer games and stuff like that. And he's like, he would, like, stick to even, like, the hardest games until I think he said something like, until my eyeballs were furry. Like, he'd just, like, stick at it until he finished. He was a sticker.
I guess that explains the difficulty of the first Discworld game, then.
Yeah.
I actually have not read any Terry Pratchett, but I think I need to start at some point in my life.
I can give you some recommendations, and I know Dave.
Honestly, well. Weirdly enough, I'd say don't start with the first books.
Oh, yes. No way. There's so much
they're all pretty much standalone. Most of the books are standalone.
I posted that on Twitter, and I got inundated with recommendations, so I have to sift through all of them. But yes.
Read Vons. Just read Vons. That's the best starting point.
Yeah. Guards is the... That's actually what the first Discworld game was based off of.
Okay.
Well, the first Discworld adventure game. The first Color of Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, was obviously based on the Color of Magic.
I was actually told to start with the Color of Magic as well.
I'm glad that wasn't my first Discworld book because
he really finds his voice later on.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, fair enough.
What I want just before we move on, I have a question for Dave. What's your favorite Discworld book?
Oh gosh,
I know that's a really hard question.
You know, it's funny because I reread Men at Arms. I can't even tell you how many times I've reread it, but it's only because that was like so I really like that one. But I think the book that really kind of like gets me the most has always been Reaper Man.
Yeah, man, I love Reaper Man so much. That's usually my recommendation to people.
Did that have any influence whatsoever? I feel this is a stupid question, but did that have any influence whatsoever on The Repossessor?
Did the Terry Pratchett death have an? You know, I can't deny that it probably did, because I was a big fan at the time. So, but I didn't want it to be the Discworld death. Like I just he's a different guy. Mm. Like he's not talking in capital letters. You know, he's not going to do that. He's just So I was kind of interested in personifications of the Grim Reaper because of Discworld, but I mean. God, this was like 15 years ago.
Sure, yeah.
I can't deny that probably yes.
I think my favorite thing about Terry Pratchett writing Death is like he makes him this character that's like a kind of clumsy yet well-meaning father who's trying to understand what his kids are doing with their modern Game Boys and stuff like that, and he's trying to figure it all out and trying to join in and getting it all wrong. But then when the shit hits the fan, he's like this, you know, omnipotent being who kicks ass when he needs to, you know, and he's all knowing and all powerful. It's crazy how he can blend those two. I mean, that makes him a very human character, having such diversity to it, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough Terry Pratchett podcast.
God, it's so many that I just love. I just closed it and I'm like, wow, that was amazing. Because,
you know,
it's one thing to make a parody of something and make fun of it, but, he loved it. You know, there was a joy and love behind the jokes. I can't quite explain what that was, but he did it. Anyway, enough maudlin.
I think the weirdest thing for me is even though the last few books he read, the quality just simply wasn't there. The few that he did before those, the Tiffany Aching books and Going Postal and Making Money are some of my favorite of his works. You know, he still had it. He wasn't like this old guy that's you get these old bands that are touring and everyone wants them to play their old songs and they want to play their new songs and no one cares about the new songs. His stuff was good, even after his, I guess, you know, the prime of his life.
He still created new characters. Writer. I was very happy with, I think it was The Truth, where he came up with a new character, the William DeWord character, the newspaper owner. Yeah. And he was actually kind of trying to, he was kind of fighting against all of the characters that were his regulars. They were now the enemy, which I thought was kind of neat.
You get a lot of different perspectives of the one world, and I think that makes it seem so much more fleshed out.
Anyway, poor Grundy is like, what are you guys talking about? Yeah. Shut up, nerds.
So we were talking about other genres.
Books are a different genre.
They are. Books are a different genre, yeah. How about if you had unlimited resources and you wanted to write a book, what would you... No.
That was your turn.
Francisco. Yeah.
What? Yeah,
tell
yeah.
us, nerd.
How are we on time, by the way? Because
we're at 54 minutes, and I've edited stuff out, so we're good. We're at usual time. I could do a really terrible segue right now. but I'm not going to because that would be terrible.
Is that your genre? Is that your genre? Is just like spend like $500 million on a Segway?
On a Segway, yes. All right, screw it. I'm going to do it. So Terry Pratchett has a daughter named Rihanna Pratchett. And Rihanna Pratchett wrote a game called Tomb Raider. And yes. Tomb Raider is a 3D platforming action-adventure game, which is the exact type of genre game that I would design.
There now, we go.
I wouldn't make like a third-person over-the-shoulder like Tomb Raider or Uncharted or anything like that. I would probably do it more in the vein of like Psychonauts, where you would have like a hub level that you could explore on its own and then have other little levels on its that you know levels that make up part of the gameplay. But I would like to focus it on story and things like that, because I really like platformers, and I like difficult platformers. And I kind of wonder if maybe I could do like some sort of just to play around with mechanics, like switch between 2D and 3D. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do like some levels be 2D like Rayman and stuff, or Mega Man with the disappearing blocks, because you know I would definitely put disappearing blocks in, because those are the bane of my existence in the Mega Man games. But yeah, I mean, I grew up playing all the classic NES platformers, and that's probably what I would do, given the opportunity.
Mm. So yeah. What do you think, like, what... Is it mostly Psychonauts that has inspired you to do that, or is it like all the old 2D platformers as well?
Nah, it's mostly all the old 2D platformers, but as far as 3D platformers go, I would say that Psychonauts is probably one of the more enjoyable ones that I've played. I haven't played any of the 3D Rayman games, but I don't know. There's just something about Rayman in 3D that doesn't really appeal to me.
I'm interested in it. I would, like, if you made another Beyond Good and Evil, I'd play the hell out of that.
Yeah, well, Beyond Good and Evil, the funny thing is, Beyond Good and Evil, I wouldn't describe it as a platformer. It's totally an action-adventure.
Love that those things are separate.
Yeah, it's, well, because you can't jump in Beyond Good and Evil. So in my opinion, if you can't jump, it's not a platformer.
You can so jump, you get the fart-powered jump boots.
Oh yeah, I forgot about those.
Jesus!
How could I forget about fart-powered jumping boots?
That's like the first magic item, that's like the first special ability you get.
Yeah, you're right, okay. Well...
Oh my god.
Yeah, well, alright, maybe... Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
You can definitely jump in Beyond Good and Evil.
Yeah, okay. Definitely platforms, because it's like platforming in the way Zelda was platformer. I mean, they were platforms.
Yeah.
Like, there were different levels of things you had to get to, and you had to, like, solve little puzzles to kind of get you somewhere else or get your companion somewhere else or whatever. But action-y when it came to, like... Oh, there was combat in it. Yeah, of course there was combat in it. But.
There's a lot of combat in it. And there's also, like, Beyond Good and Evil's got everything. It's got, like, race missions. It's got, like, stealth. Yeah. It's got combat. It's got, there's first-person shooting with the camera and the disc zapper. Everything.
It had everything but sales.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very sad reality.
Yeah. Oh.
Like, if I could get any game, like, franchise, like... I just want Beyond Good and Evil 2, and they keep teasing it, and I need it.
Yeah, we all do. I would kind of stray away from the combat, too, because, like, you have games, like... I mean, I enjoyed the God of War games, but it's... You can't deny the fact that after a while it just becomes, like... It becomes like those old side-scrolling brawlers where it gets really boring after a while, because it's just you take two steps, oh, another wave of enemies, and then another two steps, another wave of enemies, and that gets boring really fast.
So, yeah, I'm surprised you stuck with God of War for as much as you did, because I played one God of War
too.
And it was good and it was fun and I enjoyed it, and then I was like, I am done with this.
Yeah, I don't know how I managed, but...
I like the first one. The second one was, you know, it was enjoyable, but the third one... It was just so utterly cynical, and just like I don't know. Especially maybe I was playing it next to my wife at the time, which made it weird. But you know, I'm like, all right, yep, I'm totally tying this half naked chick to a bunch of gears that's gonna crush her.
Oh,
that's
God.
What I'm doing now. Yep, that's what I'm doing.
That was in Ascension, wasn't it? I don't even remember anymore. But yeah. That was the second PlayStation 3 title. Yeah, that by that point I was just like, why am I still playing this game?
Yeah.
But then you went and got the other ones, the Chains of whatever.
No, I got those first. Ascension was the last one that came out.
Yeah. You've played a lot of God of War, man.
I have.
There was a comic that was really funny because it talked about Kratos be pretty smart because he has to solve all these puzzles.
It talked about what? Sorry, you cut
out. There's a wonderful, wonderful comic. It's a ridiculous title. It's called Manly Guys Doing Manly Things. Have you heard of this comic?
No.
It's just basically about like a bunch of like manly dudes from video games and comics like hanging out in this office together and kind of like interacting. And it's really funny. And they always – like she has woman – doing crosswords and like doing all these puzzles. Yeah.
Nice.
Because he spends half his games doing puzzles.
Wait, who doing crosswords and puzzles? I didn't hear you.
Like, I just find that image very funny.
Kratos.
Yeah, he's.
Oh, Kratos. Right. Right.
Don't know. I'm kind of anti God of War just because of the whole QuickTime events being popular thing. And QuickTime events started with Shenmue.
Well, I mean, it's the first time it started in a game that people bought.
Oh. Yeah, that's pretty
sorry. Hey, Shenmue has a big following. I mean, I guess the Dreamcast exclusivity obviously hurt it, I'm sure. But
and like the fact that they was on a title like to try and recoup that amount of money, you got to sell a huge amount of like.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Got him.
Yeah.
So you're not going to make it, didn't we? So no, we're still talking about Jean.
Yeah.
All right.
Pretty much. Well, a variation of it.
Yeah, we are. But the internet seems to be dying, so we should probably wrap things up before things get any worse.
Right.
The internet was dying from like stage one of this podcast.
Yeah, I know, but now is when it's actually cutting out and making everyone unintelligible.
Yes.
Oh no!
I am a respectable boss.
Look what you've done. You've made Ben laugh too much.
Wow.
Honestly, you can give me the most convoluted joke in the world and I won't laugh, but if you make stupid noises or mention the word poo, I've lost it.
Say poo in a stupid voice?
I'm going to tell.
I didn't even have to actually do it.
I'm going to tell on you, Ben.
So I can keep my dignity and make you laugh.
Ben did a graphic for me today.
I want to know where this is going.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Anytime Ben ever does a graphic with text in it that's illegible because it's been resized, I always get curious as to what he's written because knowing Ben, it's always something ridiculous.
So
I don't know if you've looked on the Dropbox, but there's a calendar, a close-up of a calendar with things written on it. So I was looking at it, I was like, I bet this is something funny. And Ben told me that what he wrote was, and I quote, "Big butto amazo for fardo, destitute fart maker, and haha lol lulo ploppy."
It sure beats Lauren Ipsum.
And the other half was specified in lyrics.
Yes. And ploppy... Ploppy poo ploppa. I bet you're really, really happy that you hired us both on now.
that's what my Torrance Passage save game
is. Oh, yeah. It's not visible in the game. I'm happy.
Yeah, Ben's Torrance Passage. I was watching Ben play Torrance Passage on Skype, and his save game went from like 1, 2, 3 to like ploppy ploppy poo poo ploppy.
All right. Yeah, this is starting to get very unintelligible, isn't it?
Yes, well, for other reasons, but yes. Anyway, yes, this has been episode 69, dudes, of the Book of Tools podcast.
Yeah, we managed to go through the whole thing without making that joke.
Yeah, well, not anymore. Anyway, if you want to follow people on Twitter, you can follow me at Grundislav Games.
I'm at Wajedi Games.
And clearly don't follow me because you don't want to see my tweets.
Yes, but you can at Ben_304, and you can follow us at BCT _ podcast. Thank you, Dave, for being on our podcast once again.
Always
yeah,
a pleasure.
Thanks for being and for talking about RPGs with me, because Francisco never will.
And for not firing us for being stupid.
No, it's not like he...
Oh, I see. Janet is the secret invisible hand.
Yeah, she's behind me. She's in the kitchen.
She's the Machiavellian.
Behind every great man is a great woman.
That's true.
Yeah, well, she is behind me.
That's true.
Well, sometimes in front, you never know.
All right. All right, guys. Well, I guess that's it.
Thank you for listening, and don't ask us about Loom. Bye!